Hello, language fans. I'm your host, Adam. You are listening to Path of the Polyglot, where we talk about language and learning language and learning languages and different things connected to linguistics and linguistic history. I was talking to my wife, who supports my hobbies of doing podcasting generally, but I was talking to her about this particular podcast because I have several others, and she's like, "What do you talk about?" And I'm like, "Learning languages. Like, do you teach people how to learn languages?" And I'm like, "Not exactly. It's kind of like a journal entry or a love letter to the process of learning languages and languages in themselves." So speaking of that, this week I have finished all of my Scots. I have learned about 500 words connected to the Scots language, and I have also learned different phrases connected to asking where the bathroom is. So if you remember, my quest is to learn 10 languages at a very almost fluent level, and another 90 at an A1 level or at a pretty basic level. So I'm pretty confident if I went to Scotland and I met a person who only spoke Scots, and that would never happen, but if I met a person who only spoke Scots, I could understand what they were talking about. And in a week or two of constant companionship, I could probably start to have a conversation. So that's pretty good. One of the 10 big languages that I'm currently focusing on is Spanish, and that continues normally going on. I think I'm on the Memorize Spanish course 6, and the reason I chose Spanish to concentrate on first was because that was the first second language it's kind of a weird thing to say, the first second language, but it's the first language that I spoke, apart from English, really, really well. And yeah, and I also finished the Memorize Introductory Mandarin course. And I have to say, I really love Mandarin. Mandarin is a pretty cool language. It's unique, and it just sounds great to my ears. And I hope I will be able to speak in Mandarin to someone someday. Right now I can say, or maybe recognize a few phrases, like, I'm trying to think of something, like, wo shi de, I think. No, I don't remember anything off the top of my head. Anyway, so that's where my linguistic efforts are at the moment. And if you would like to support me in those linguistic efforts or this podcast, and your help will improve the sound quality of the podcast, that's what I'm focused on at the moment, you can go to patreon.com/leverton, and you can be like Lance Romanoff, Seth Horton, Andrew Krutz, Mushek Yavrumian, Nancy Davison, Robbie Masso, and Vladislav Roche Desvensky. They all support the podcast in different ways. Yeah, so today's topic is all about Italian. And Italian is a very strange language because it's the something like the 25th most spoken language in the world, but it's probably about the 4th or 6th language which is most popular to learn as a second language. And I guess it's just connected to that Italian romance, like, ooh, Italy, everybody loves Italy, everybody loves Italian food, Italian fashion, Italian design, all of those things. So I think it's connected to that. And I have here, and of course, Italian is one of my big 10 languages, and the reason for that is because I want to, well, so this is kind of a pop or a very simplified version of Italian history. So, many, many, many years ago, there was one group of people, the Indo-Europeans, and they probably lived somewhere around Ukraine, around the Black Sea, in Russia, somewhere in that area. And they traveled, this is thousands of years ago. So they traveled in different directions. So some of them went into Europe, and there were already people living in Europe, but some of them went into Europe. Some of them went south into India. Some of them went into Iran. Some of them went back in the direction into Asia. And, but the people who went into Europe, there was kind of three main thrusts. There was the Celtic languages. Then there was, and maybe not then, this all happened around the same time. So the Celts went into Northern Europe, like France and England and Ireland, and the kind of like proto-Italic group went into Italy, and the proto-Greek group went into Greece, and then the Germanic languages stayed in kind of the German area, and later on they would migrate. But for the point of this story that I'm telling you, so in Italy there were many different tribes, and Rome eventually conquered all of those tribes, and through different reasons they conquered most of Western Europe, all of Southern Europe, a lot of Northern Africa, and most of the Middle East. So they were very, very successful as an empire. And so a lot of those people actually moved, and the Latin that they spoke became different languages in different areas. So French, Spanish, Catalan, Italian, Roman, Romansh, Sardinian, Neapolitan, all those are different kinds of romantic languages. Not that they are like full of romance, but they're from the Roman Empire. And there is another question. I mean, this is always an interesting question, like what's a language, what's a dialect? So there's always this interesting question connected to those languages, because they're pretty mutually intelligible. But anyway, what happened in Italy is that there were many different languages developed from this Latin kind of base, and they all kind of coexisted in the Italian peninsula. So I have here, this information is from a website called thelocal.com. It's written by Catherine, I don't know why I said Catherine, Catherine Edwards. It's 21 mildly interesting facts about the Italian language. So there's 21 letters in the Italian alphabet. So J, K, W, X, and Y don't exist in Italian. And if you look in a dictionary, an Italian dictionary under J, the only word you usually find is jeans. But the re you might find those letters in Italian names or in Italian place names, because there's also different dialects that use those words. And again, we go back to the question of what is a dialect, what is a language. So after the Romans went everywhere in Europe, and Latin, they brought Latin everywhere, Latin kind of fell apart and collapsed into different dialects. And well, the different dialects, maybe to put it a little bit more properly, they collapsed into different languages. So in Italy, you had many of these different dialect languages, basically, not dialects, languages. And they people speaking them could more or less understand each other, but it was clear that they were different languages. And it's only quite recently that the idea that there is an Italian language developed. So, how did that happen? Well, in the 13th century in Tuscany, specifically in Florence, Florence was one of the most richest and most powerful cities in the world, and it's kind of their dialect was considered to be the dialect of power And again, I keep saying dialect, but really language. So it was a dialect, a language of power and prestige. So that's one thing, because of the economic weight of Florence, that language was given a lot of priority over other languages, but also because some very good writers were writing in that language, like Dante, Petrarch, and Boccaccio. And also, it was the first Italian language to have a grammar written by Pietro Bembo. So there were rules, it had prestige, so it kind of won out in the competition of what Italian language would represent the Italian peninsula. So, if we talk about those Italian languages, apart from the Florentine dialect, again, sorry, language, the Neapolitan is the most popular. It's spoken by over 5 million different people in Italy, and it's like the ice cream. I don't know if you still have that in North America, and I imagine so. Neapolitan ice cream is a thick band of strawberry, thick band of vanilla, and thick band of chocolate, and I imagine it has something to do with the flag of Naples. But when I was younger, I always thought it was Napoleonic ice cream. Yeah, that's kind of embarrassing. I also thought that coniferous plants were dangerous somehow in my imagination, because I confuse coniferous and carnivorous. So, yeah, the embarrassing things you believe when you're a kid. So, if you want to know about the least commonly spoken Italic language, that's what this group of languages is called. It's Croato, which is the language of Molise. And apparently there's some debate as to whether that actually exists, that language. So it's the official language of Italy, Switzerland, the Vatican, San Marino, and it's recognized as a minority language in Slovenia, Croatia, and Brazil. 1 million people also speak it in the United States, but much more people in the United States claim an Italian ancestry, about 17 million people. And out of 350 million, that's actually quite a lot. And you can see their influence in crime, of course. I'm sorry, that's a stereotype, but it's kind of true. In crime, in culture, definitely. The first written example of we have of Italian is probably a legal document called the Placeti Casinesi. And that's always an interesting question too, especially with Romance languages, like what is the earliest example of this language? Because when does a language become a language? That's an interesting question. When a language becomes a language, and what's the difference between a dialect and a language? Yeah. So, for example, I had a thought, and maybe I talked about this during the English episode. What's the difference between, Serbian and Croatian and Bosnian and Macedonian? I think Macedonian actually is more of a, I mean, it's not in that category. I think it's, no. No, Moldavian, yeah. Macedonian, I think, is actually more of a separate language than those other three. But, so those languages have very, very small distinctions. But between North American English and British English, there's a much wider gap, but we still consider it to be the same language. So, couldn't you just consider all Romance languages one big language? Because they generally have the same rules and they generally have the same vocabulary. So it's an interesting question. When Italian became Italian, when French became French. And the first novel written in Italian, that was by Alessandro Manzoni, and it's called Il Promesso Sposi, and that is The Betrothed. And it's about Italian life under Spanish rule. He spent 4 years writing this novel, and he said something like he purified the language. And what he meant is that he went to Florence and he made it more like the Florentine version of Italian. And so Florence, the takeaway from this story is that Florence is really, really important in the history of Italian. There's also an Accademia della Crusca, which protects the purity of the Italian language, and that is also based in Florence. And about how random the fact that the language we know as Italian is called Italian is like shown by this following fact. So when Italy was unified in 1861, only 2.5% of the population could speak the language. They spoke more of these regional Italic languages like Neapolitan. And now about that figures about 90%, although there are about 5% of people in Italy who cannot understand the national language. And going back to what I said previously, the vocabulary of Italian is shared 89% with French, 88% with Catalan, 85% with Sardinian, 82% with Spanish and Portuguese, and 77% with Romanian, which is pretty much what we would expect. So Romania is the furthest, maybe not geographically, but the furthest culturally away. And Portuguese and Spanish are also further away than all those other things. Oh, yeah. So I said this in the introduction, but yeah, Italian is the fourth most studied language in the world, which is crazy, because it's the 25th most spoken language in the world. The longest word in the Italian language is generally said to be Principete volissime volamente, which is very quickly, but there are some other longer words like sfagodermatodigionoplastica, which is a kind of plastic surgery. But then there's another long word, which is quattrocento cinquanta. 4050 cento quaranta quattrissimo, and that's the written form of 454, 500 and 454,544th. There are two words in Italian that have eight consecutive vowels, which are G-I-I-I-U-G-L. Sorry, I can't say it at all. And Q-I-I-A-L-I-O. So the first one is a person who sells or produces gravel, and the other one is a person who sells or produces leather. There's a few words which contain four consecutive consonants, like substrato, sanscrito, inscrito, and instradare. To direct. And there's lots of double consonants in Italian, but there's very few double Q's. One word is soqquadro, which is shambles. There's many words with four pairs of consonants, like appoltellare, to ball up, and dispellire, to dig up. And the highest number of consonants in a single Italian word is eight, with indivisibilissimi and indistinguibilissimi, I can't say. So, very indivisible and very indistinguishable. So, that is with eight letters and it's eight So sorry, that's eight letter I's in one word. And very random fact, but there's no Italian word that rhymes with fegato. Although there are a lot of ones that end in egato. Sorry. And that's because the stress is fegato, 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 and not fegato, like I said, but fegato. So another word that there's no rhyme for is despota, despota, which is despot, clearly. All right, so that is Italian. My journey through the Italian language, and I don't think that I need to do the Adam Does Memorize because I did speak a lot of Italian, and Italian is probably very easy in your grasp. I'm sure you've listened to Italian, you've heard Italian before, definitely. So, anyway, that is all for today. If you have any questions or comments, please go to the Facebook page, The Path of the Polyglot, click like and leave your message. And again, if you want to support the podcast, please go to patreon.com/Leverton. The link is always in the show notes. So thank you very much and goodbye.